nothing figgy, no man, he no man. Girl thing, he no hard, he no hard. Touch no skala, we no man, we no man. A boy better go with that, cause we nah no nothing figgy, no man. Yo, Jordan. Me no understand, no, me no understand. From a
I'm gonna leave you one song like this. I'm gonna get out of here.
From me a little boy in a the mango run.
Girl like J Harmony, I leave it like this. Catch the same place, next week same place, same time, y'all.
Every night before I lay my head down to rest, take a moment and I think how much I'm blessed.
I'm gonna play back one more time, y'all. I'm a before I get out of here, but just afterwards, right, gonna take over, right, until 5 o'clock.
Wanna say a big respect up to the listener.
There is this thing going on. Do you realize our consciousness is affected? There is this thing going on. What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.
Listening to the Prison Radio Show, a part of CKUT's Off the Hour. Prison Radio has been on the air for more than 10 years. Prison Radio seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggle by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging our ideas about what are prisons and the people inside our jails. Prison Radio is dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. This is in the interest of forging stronger ties with incarcerated and non-incarcerated people, ensuring that prisoners have direct control over their representation, and that our understanding of prisons be informed by those who live inside their walls. We invite anyone who is interested in collaborating on programming to contact us. Those who have been affected by the prison system in any way are encouraged to get involved. You can email news@cqt.ca or prison@cqt.ca, or you can call us at 514-448-4041, extension 6788. You are listening to CQUT, Montreal Community Campus Radio, located on 90.3 FM on the dial, and www.cqt.ca online.
You're listening to The Prison Radio Show. My name's Noah, and I'm your host for today's show. Today on The Prison Radio Show, we have an interview with Ben Turk about the call for action coming out of the United States to end prison slavery. Ben talks to us about the call for work stoppage, how folks can get involved, and why to get involved. We'll also hear an audio version of a letter written to Justin Trudeau. The letter comes from the Termite Collective and is demanding changes to the federal prison system. We end the show today with a speech given by Dudley Laws in 2010. In the speech, Laws gives a brief history of police killings in African-Canadian communities over the past 40 years. As we'll hear in our interview with Ben Turk, prisoners in two state prisons in Michigan went on food strikes in March. Prisoners in Kinross Correctional Facility left the yard early and refused to eat prison cafeteria food on March 20th and 21st to protest the quality of food in the prison, diminished food portions, and a lack of substitute items for people who don't eat meat. There are 1,300 people imprisoned in Kinross, and 1,000 of them participated in the protest. On March 30th, the protest spread to Chippewa Correctional Facility in Michigan, where prisoners in one wing of the prison refused to eat prison cafeteria food for an entire weekend. Solidarity demonstrations were held on the outside in Lansing, Michigan, to support the prisoners. Two folks escaped from a locked ward of a psychiatric hospital in Washington State this week. One of them remains on the run. Our thoughts are with you, Anthony Garver. As you'll hear in this next interview, prisoners in the United States have issued a call for action against prison slavery. Prisoners are calling for work stoppages to begin on the anniversary of the Attica Uprising, September 9th, 2016. For more information about the call for action, we caught up with Ben Turk, an anarchist in the U.S. who's been involved in prison support efforts south of the border.
So the first question that I have for you is, can you introduce yourself and situate yourself a bit? Maybe let us know a bit about why it makes sense for us to talk to you about this prisoner strike that's happening in September.
My name is Ben Turk, and I've been a prisoner supporter and advocate for like 5 or 8 years or something like that, working with guys in Ohio but also around the country. I've been coordinating the North American AIDS conference for the last 2 years. I'm a member of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee of the IWW, and I've been working closely with the Free Alabama Movement and prisoners and prisoner supporters across the country to kind of coordinate this stuff.
Great. Let's jump right into it then. What are the details of this strike that's happening in September? What is this call to action all about?
Yeah, so prisoners have been fighting against, confinement and prison and all of the deprivations that they experience, as well as horrible labor conditions, which are a continuation of slavery. And that's been going on for decades, or maybe since the first prison was built. And in recent years, that has really grown. Starting in 2010, there was a very large work stoppage in Georgia, followed by huge hunger strikes across California that involved some work stoppaging as well. And then in January 2014, the Free Alabama Movement shut down all of the prisons in Alabama for about a month, which was also historically large prisoner work strike. And so a lot of the prisoners that I've been working with all over the place since then have also been resisting in various different ways. And everybody has talked about the idea of, you know, we can make this more successful if it's coordinated, if it's happening on a national level. And so I started reaching out to folks on the outside through the ABC conference and various other networking opportunities to see if we can actually support that, because the thing that has been lacking in all of these efforts has been outside support. Prisoners are ready to do these things. They're ready to organize, coordinate, resist, take on risks themselves, but none of that achieves, it's very difficult for any of that to achieve substantive results if there's not people on the outside shining a light in on what's going on. And so we're trying to build that component of it and see whether or not we can succeed.
Okay. So the call out for this action talks about how this is a call for a nationwide prisoner work stoppage to end prison slavery starting September 9th, 2016, which is the anniversary with the uprising of Attica. And you're talking about like organizing support for this on the outside. Do you want to talk a bit more about what that looks like? I know there's been a call out that's been circulating a lot. Do you want to talk about other things that have been happening to support this call on the outside?
Yeah. We're trying to follow the strategy that was proposed and set up by the Free Alabama Movement in the document they wrote called Let the Crops Rot in the Field. And it's a multiple-step strategy based on spreading general education, making sure everybody's aware of what's going on, and then building outside support and demonstrating the various levels of outside support. And then the prisoners also developing demands and choosing tactics based on their conditions of confinement and their levels of support on the outside. And so it's really important for people to be, you know, if you're doing prisoner support at all, it's important to be reliable and to not give people false hope and get them excited about things that you then flake out on doing, because they take a lot of personal risk by getting involved in resisting in any way against the prison authorities. And so one of the things that we're looking to do is have a number of mobilizations and support actions leading up to September so that people can hold rallies and hold public events and do outreach and build momentum on the outside so that prisoners on the inside know what kind of support levels there are for them should they participate in any kind of protest and thus choose their tactics in a well-informed way.
What's your sense of how things are being coordinated on the inside? Is this mostly coming from a specific region of the country or like a specific political tendency inside? Is it kind of widespread and communication is happening in all sorts of different ways? How are people getting organized on the inside?
The most active or like ready to go people seem to be in the South and the Southeast. But prisoners are dissatisfied and disenchanted everywhere. And there's differences. It seems like folks in Wisconsin, where I am now, talk about communication restrictions and solitary confinement that they experience a lot. Prisoners in the South, in Texas and Alabama, are very centered on this idea of slavery because they are not paid anything for their work unless they get, like, the good job. And so for them, that very much resonates with the experience, you know, in the South, in America, of slavery. But that in other parts of the country, that seems to be less attractive to prisoners, and they're more concerned with other things like their conditions of confinement and, you know, just experiences of control and deprivation that go along with being incarcerated.
So the way you're talking about this actually makes it sound a bit broader than my sense was from the call out. Is your sense that the call out is actually about more than just a work strike or something like that, and that it's also calling for a lot of other, perhaps more varied forms of resistance, both from people on the inside and people on the outside?
So a work strike is, so how prisons work in America is they are maintained by the prisoners doing forced labor. All of the floors are cleaned by prisoners, the food, the laundry, all of those things are done by prisoners who are forced to do them. And so when you do a work strike, if you manage to organize that to get everybody to refuse to go to work and to shut the facilities down, that creates a massive crisis for that prison institution, for statewide, so you get it going on statewide. And so there's going to be serious heavy reprisals against any prisoners who try to do that. And so the folks in Alabama and other places where they have the support and where they feel confident that they can actually do that, they also recognize that prisoners in other places are not going to be able to participate in that kind of level. And so they welcome people choosing tactics that make sense to them and letting a variety of different things occur. And for example, in Michigan recently, there have been a number of instances where people are not doing full-on hunger strikes, but they're refusing to eat the food that is provided by the state. And so the state calls everybody to the chow hall, and they just don't go. And instead, they eat their own food in the commissary. And it's a form of protest that does not create an immediate crisis for the prison administration, but it is still like a demonstration of power, a demonstration of organization, and a protest against what's going on in the prison that might not lead to as severe of reprisals against them immediately as a full-on work stoppage, or that might be easier for them to coordinate than a full-on work stoppage. So it's the goal, the ideal, is if we could have a nationwide work stoppage, but that's pretty unrealistic to get everybody on board with something like that. So the prisoners want to welcome everyone's participation on whatever level they are able to, they feel like safe and able to participate.
The Prison Radio Show has a bunch of folks who listen to our show who are currently incarcerated in Canada. Do you have any thoughts for folks in Canada who might be looking to figure out a way to get involved? Is there ways that you think the analysis in this call out overlaps with the ways that prisons work up here?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding, and it's very incomplete, but my understanding is that the Canadian prison system is increasingly adopting a lot of the practices of the U.S.'s prison system. And so I think coordination across that border would be a really awesome and excellent thing. And I know the prisoners here, at least the ones that I know, would totally welcome that sort of thing. And there are ways for folks, for like outside supporters, to get in touch with us. You can either go to the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee website, which is iwoc.noblog.org, or the supportprisonerresistance.net website. There's contact information on both of those. And if folks in Canada are interested in joining and participating in something like this, we would be happy to share the word about that and coordinate.
Is there anything that I haven't asked that you feel like we should cover? I have like a bit of a last question too.
So the call out for September 9th has been in the works for a while, but before it was released, folks in Texas called for a work stoppage to start April 4th. And kind of in response to that, folks in Alabama have called for, we're like, they're trying to continue to build this, so they're calling for a work stoppage for the whole month of May. And so there's already prisoners who are sort of jumping on this and already kind of getting things started before the organizing that for the nationally coordinated thing, which is, you know, excellent, and it's important that we support everybody who's doing anything, and we hope that we can have these more regional or statewide things contribute to the mobilization for the national strike in September. So there are ways on both of those websites I mentioned where you can find out how to promote those. We're hoping that people's May Day celebrations, protest rallies, and things like that can include prisoner support and this message against slavery and spreading the word about this.
I guess my last question is about like a bit of a pitch for why it makes sense politically for people on the outside to be, you know, organizing in solidarity with prisoners, organizing against prison in general. Like, do you have thoughts on that? I think I ask everyone in the U.S. who I talk to about this, but there's like lots of people sort of talking about the start of a mass movement against mass incarceration in the U.S. If you have any thoughts on that and what that could mean in the context of these strikes, that would also be great.
Yeah, I think, I mean, prison affects everybody. You know, even those of us who have the kind of privileges that I have are affected by prison, if not directly. On a theoretical level, prison is, I think, the glue that holds capitalism together and patriarchy and white supremacy. And that if we can throw the prison system into a crisis and force it to change or hopefully abolish it, then we also make trouble for all of those other systems that oppress and control all of us. Prison is also the way that that wages are depressed for everybody. You either are competing with prisoners who they can pay little or nothing to do work through private, like insourcing to private corporations, who then don't have to pay people real money because they can get cheap labor from prisoners. And it's also a way, like as an amateur economist, the labor market is just generally depressed by having a large number of unemployed people, and there are a lot of unemployed people in the United States right now, and prison is how we manage, how this, our government and society manage to control and contain that large number of unemployed people to keep them, to make sure that they continue to resort to desperate means that actually hurt each other and their communities more, rather than resorting to desperate means that challenge class hierarchies and things like that. Prison is not about fighting crime. It's about circulating crime in certain neighborhoods and containing crime in certain populations and making sure that those populations continue to struggle and benefit the rich. As far as like a national movement against mass incarceration, I've been seeing that grow, and it's interesting because I feel like I have grown increasingly aware of the issues around prison at the same time that I've seen the movement grow. So sometimes I don't know whether this is like I'm just perceiving things more because I'm paying attention better, or if there is actually like a burgeoning awareness and push against prison and these things. I'm hoping it's the latter. And I think it's especially interesting in that context because there are a lot of liberal solutions. You know, even Hillary Clinton talks about mass incarceration, and the Koch brothers and Van Jones and the Koch brothers have teamed up to address mass incarceration. And, like, dealing with the problem of mass incarceration on the priorities of rich mother is not going to solve it for the people who are actually affected by it. And so that's why it's important that we address mass incarceration on our terms and foregrounding the people who are in prison or who are in communities that are targeted by mass incarceration and making sure that their interests and needs are the ones that are being addressed instead of the interests and needs of the state budgets that just want to save money and who will find other ways of maintaining capitalism and social control and racial hierarchy and all of those things without the expensive aspect of prison. So if we can fight prison now on our terms, then we don't allow the reformers to remove it or address it in ways that keep them or even entrench their power further.
Can you do one last explanation of the logistics of the strike and timing of it and stuff?
Yeah, so September 9th, 2016, prisoners, hopefully all across the country, will be joining a work stoppage or some form of protest, and we are looking for people on the outside to build support, to participate in call-ins for prison resistance activities that are already going on now, as well as build awareness and organizing in your community to stand up and defend the prisoners who are near you, should they choose to participate in that strike.
That was Ben Turk speaking with Virginia of the Prison Radio Show. Ben and Virginia talked about the call for a strike in prisons across the U.S. for September of this year. Check out our blog for more info, or check out supportprisonerresistance.net or iwoc.noblogs.org. You can also tune into the show throughout the summer for more interviews about the strike and mobilizations for it, both inside and outside prison.
Howl Arts Festival 2016. Join us April 16th to 24th. Community discussions, concerts, dance, exhibitions, an activist art fair, and much more. Performances by Lamia Yarad, Beatrice Deer, Xara Dion, Elena Studley, Nenon, Orchestra Criminal, Kutsi Murky, Sarah Page, Will Islini, Jonah Fortune, Sarah Albu, Odaya, Katie Moore, Saxon Drum, H. De Hutz, Kai Kello, Blunt Chunks, Ras Moshe, Sam Shalabi, Mohammed Masmoudi, and many more. Taking place at Casa del Popolo, La Sala Rosa, Casa Maza, La Cajibi. Full info, howlarts.net. This is a CKUT Radio co-presentation.
The time is presently 5:25, and you're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. The next piece is an audio version of a letter that appeared online in mid-February of this year. You can read the letter at demandprisonschange.wordpress.com. In the letter, federal prisoners and their allies demand changes to the federal prison system.
A letter to Justin Trudeau. Dear Liberal government, congratulations on being elected. We are writing to you as people concerned for the well-being and dignity of prisoners in Canada. Some of us are currently incarcerated. Some of us are not. For many years, the right and entitlement established by the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedom have not been upheld in Canadian prisons. Since the Conservatives took power, we have returned to system of incarceration based on retribution rather than rehabilitation. This perspective has had an enormous economic impact, with the cost of prison and prison construction rising. This money could have been better spent elsewhere. We are writing to urge you to defend the rights that all people are entitled to, regardless of whether they are in the community or behind bars. You ran on a platform describing yourself as real change and hope. Here's what we think you should change.
Criminalization. We protest the fact that more people are doing more time. Prison sentences are getting longer and longer. More people are being brought back for parole violations. More people are facing extra years on their sentences after being refused at a parole board hearing. This has both economic and human costs. We demand that all the bills passed during the Conservative government's era regarding prison be overturned. We demand that the parole board and parole officers honor eligibility dates. Eligibility dates are a time set by a judge during sentencing, after which a person is allowed to appear in front of a parole board to ask for parole. We demand the return of the Faint Hope Clause, Criminal Code Section 745, as it was in its original form. This allowed people to access a judicial review after serving 15 years of a sentence. If the judicial review was favorable, people were then eligible to appear in front of the parole board and ask for parole. We recommend an overhaul of the parole revocation process. It is unjust that the parole board can give a jail sentence of 4 years after a parole revocation for breaking a parole condition. Parole board members are not judges. This process is nothing like a trial. The process, as it currently works, effectively results in being locked up for 4 years for acts as banal as breaking curfew by 1 minute. We demand shorter waiting periods for people who have received negative parole board decisions and would like to see the parole board again. The current average wait time is 2 years, and that is too lengthy.
Justice. We protest the transfer of prisoners based on unproven allegations. We protest the impunity of the prison system as a whole. Our supposed bad attitudes are not a reason for a transfer and increase in security level. Nowhere in our correctional plan does it say we must be happy. We protest the lack of privacy both inside prison and when on parole or probation. Many prisoners currently face double bunking, which is accompanied by a loss of both dignity and privacy. We demand the creation of an independent group to deal with prisoners' grievances. Allowing Correctional Services Canada to investigate itself is an inherent injustice and lacks transparency. We demand that prisoners' grievances be dealt with fairly and efficiently, that is to say, in good faith and within 3 months after the grievance is submitted. We demand the establishment of paralegal services, access to up-to-date legal texts, pro bono lawyers or law students, and no disciplinary repercussions for individuals using this knowledge to help themselves or others.
Okay, work. We protest the cuts to our wages. We should have access to real wages, not pennies. CorCan, Correction Canada Industries, is a separate entity of CSC. Its mission was to provide meaningful employment and skills. It was a way for long-term prisoners to keep their families together and short-termers to build some money for release. In fall of 2013, prisoners' pay was cut. The bonus initiatives the prisoners used to receive for working at CorCan have been taken away. The cost of living has increased over the years, and funds are needed to support our families, assist them visitation costs, and save for our eventual release. Currently, the maximum wage pay for 10 days is $69. Of that sum, we must pay $15.18 to kitchen services, $5.52 to telephone services and maintenance, $11 to television fees and maintenance, and $3.73 to saving account. Only $33.57 remain. Our pay rates have not been indexed to inflation since 1982. The cost of living has increased over the years, and the funds are needed to support our families, assist them in visitation costs, and save for our eventual release. We demand that our pay rate equal the provincial minimum wage in the province where we are imprisoned, and that our pay reflect the cost of living in 2016, increase each year according to inflation. We demand that the pay initiative for CorCan workers be brought back. We demand access to actual insurance for workplace injuries and illnesses. The current $250 we receive is insufficient. We demand access to Canadian pension plan. Even as we protest cuts to wages, we decree the lack of job opportunities inside prison. We also protest the lack of job opportunities for prisoners who have been released and emphasize the need for job support that specializes in prisoner placement. We demand access to trade and training while in prison and to have an accreditation that is recognized and outside of the prison.
Programs. We protest the closure of the prison farms, the defunding of lifeline programs, and the closing of countless productive and meaningful social programs. As outlined in the Perron Report Task Force on Long-Term Offenders, programming is essential for successful reintegration. We recommend that the Liberal government reinstate the prison farm programs. The farm programs help to foster practical skills, a sense of self-sufficiency, and a form of zoo therapy through the care of animals. The farms allowed us to feed ourselves and brought in revenue through the sale of milk and eggs. We demand that the government reinstate the Lifeline program. We further demand that the people with the life sentences be given a voice in the hiring process for Lifeline. We demand a reduction in the wait time for all programming, especially for people with life and long-term sentences. We recommend the reinstatement of all social programs closed during the Conservative reign, including OPEX, Maison d'arrêt, and life skills programming.
Food. We protest the high prices of food in prison. We decry the lack of expiration dates on all products in prison. We also protest the lack of training we receive inside prison to prepare healthy meals. Some prisoners in minimum or medium security institutions live in independent living units where they are expected to prepare their own meals. They receive $35 per week for food. With the high cost of food, that amount is insufficient. We demand that kitchen and food trades training programs be reinstated and that food be prepared in the prison by inmates, not brought and frozen from elsewhere and reheated. We demand access to better, fresher food and real milk in the prison cafeteria, where we eat three times a day. We demand that the meals served by the cafeteria reflect the Canadian nutritional guidelines and that the expiration dates on the food be visible and respected.
Visits. Though we are spending time behind bars, our family members are punished for our actions. The disrespectful, suspicious treatment of our family and friends is unacceptable. Our phone conversations are cut short without notice. Visiting hours are canceled unexpectedly and without cause. There are insufficient phones on the prison wings. Wait times are excessive. Currently, our family and friends have to call a phone number between specific hours in order to secure a visit with us. Often, no one answers the phone, or the phone is busy for the entire period during which one can call. Even when our visitors are able to secure a visiting time and drive, often a great distance, to come and see us, the visits can be canceled at the door if the ion scan machine beeps at them. Ion scan machines used to detect drugs and illicit substances are known to produce false positives. We protest the cutting of family days. Family days offer an opportunity to visit with our families from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. They occur much less frequently than in the past years. Keeping strong relationships with people on the outside is essential for our health and well-being. We protest the lack of support we receive in pursuing these relationships. We demand that CSC staff show more respect to our visitors. We demand that CSC fix the phone system so the phone doesn't cut off anymore. We further demand reimbursement for the cost of every phone call when our calls get cut off, regardless of the length of the phone call. We demand the reinstatement of family days. We request that at least 8 occur per year. We demand more visiting hours in the evenings for our family members who work during the days and are not available on weekends.
Education. We should have access to education, no opportunities on the inside. In the last 20 years, Correctional Service Canada has cut almost all trade programs available to us. They have cut off our access to outside education. We should have access to education about technology. Progressive change to technology on the outside leaves us unable to function once we get out. We reiterate our demand for the reinstatement of trade programs. We recommend the reestablishment of educational program, especially with regards to modern technology and media. We recommend that library contains more up-to-date educational book, especially pertaining to Canadian law. We demand that all education level be accessible and bilingual. We demand that access to personal computer be reinstated.
Health. We protest the lack of accessibility of medical services inside prison. Many people inside wait years for a diagnosis and then are put on another long waiting list and for any needed surgery. It can take months to see a doctor or a dentist. We protest the lack of compassionate palliative care. There's a lack of personal care assistance for older inmates, leaving many without compassion or dignity. We demand that preventative medical services be made more accessible, that access to multivitamins and supplements be reinstated, and that the CSC honor prescriptions written for us by doctors on the outside. We demand timely access to psychologists who provide follow-up care, not just evaluations, reduced wait times to see a dentist or have an optical exam, and the reinstatement of free teeth cleanings for people serving life sentences. We demand that trained health professionals lead programming related to substance use, not prison guards. We demand appropriate treatment for older inmates, especially for those needing painkillers and chronic disease medication. For these older inmates, we demand the lifting of restrictions on certain prescriptions in order to prioritize their health. We demand access to trained professionals to provide palliative care and personal care assistance to those with severe chronic disease or disability.
Reintegration. Correctional Service Canada, through its Correction and Conditional Release Act, is mandated to assist in the rehabilitation of offenders, their reintegration in the community. CSC is currently not fulfilling its reintegration mandate. Many people are sent back to jail for something that could have been dealt with in the community. Once inside prison, people lack opportunities for reconnecting with the outside community. We demand that more community groups be eligible to come inside prison as volunteers in order to run rehabilitation programs and build relationships necessary for reintegration. We recommend that the warden regain the ability to give permission for unescorted temporary absences and escorted temporary absences and the community. The current system is organization clogs the system with bureaucracy and limits accessibility to rehabilitative outings in the community. We demand alternative to re-imprisonment for parole violations. Parole violations often are instances where someone did not break the law and that should not be dealt with through imprisonment. This is an issue of habeas corpus and costs the taxpayers a great deal. We demand that the parole board cease imposing non-association clause as a parole condition. The non-association clause is a parole condition that requires parolees to figure out within 15 minutes whether or not they are speaking with someone who has a criminal record or an active police file.
Media and communications. Prisoners are discriminated against in the media. News articles about prisons focus only on the most high-profile cases. Media attention and public service communications amplify unfounded fears. As a result, prisoners face discrimination upon release, especially with regards to employment. We demand that rehabilitation and reintegration success stories be celebrated in order to commend the hard work of people inside and their families. We demand transparent publications of findings that crime rates are on the decline in Canada. We demand the representation of prisoners in the media change. Having an open-minded, understanding community is necessary to reduce harm, decrease recidivism, and promote reintegration.
In conclusion, prisoners deserve the right to a second chance. We urge you to heed our demands to ensure a dignified life for all prisoners and that all prisoners successfully reintegrate into society following their release.
Woohoo!
That was the audio version of a letter written by federal prisoners and their allies demanding changes to the federal prison system. You can read the letter at demandprisonschange.wordpress.com and find ways to support the prisoners' demands. Dudley Laws is a founding member of the Toronto-based Black Action Defense Committee. The Black Action Defense Committee began its work in 1988 following the police shooting of Lester Donaldson. In this short speech delivered at OISE on July 17, 2010, Dudley Laws presents a brief history of police killings in African-Canadian communities over the past 40 years. Sadly, Dudley Laws died of kidney disease a few months following this recording, 5 years ago on March 24, 2011.
Dedicated duty to speak to you this evening about the continuing problem of police oppression in Canada, especially in African Canadian communities and communities all over the world. It is indeed a pleasure to see so many of you this evening, because I thought that after the struggles of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, we have lost the will to struggle for justice and equality in the criminal justice system. But tonight I will give you a brief summary of what took place during the past 40 years that I have been involved, I should say 50 years that I have been involved in communities in England, Jamaica, Canada, and other places. My impression of the present situation is that policing and those who control the criminal justice system have taken total control not only of police, but of communities that police have controlled themselves. I will read part of some of my statements. And over the past 40 years, I have worked with several organizations and individuals in various communities to address the problem of policing. Some of the demonstrations that were responsible to police killings we look historically as we are told of the first mass demonstrations we had in Toronto. It was a young brother Andrew Buddy Evans. And brother Evans was murdered at the Flying Disco at Queen and Spadina, unharmed, and Buddy was shot to death. And at other time, we organized a group called Justice for Buddy Evans. And that was one of the first mass demonstrations we had in Toronto. Then not close half the Buddy's death, police entered the home of Albert Johnson on Manchester Avenue and shot Mr. Johnson to death. I can remember the newscast that very same evening when Colsey, a 7-year-old young child, told the news, my father was told to kneel down, and after he knelt, he was shot by police. Then we again had demonstration, massive demonstration for the death of Mr. Johnson. We worked with the family to secure financial compensation for Mrs. Johnson and her family. This took place over the period of about 4 years. Community assistance with the family working together to ensure that they were compensated for the husband and father's death. Nobody was charging those two killings. Then after that, we have the killing of Lester Donaldson. Lester Donaldson was in his room, a rented place space. His wife was not there at the time. Police entered his home and said to Lester, Lester, I would like to speak to you. He said, no, I do not want to speak to you. The reason why Lester Donaldson did not want to speak to the police, Lester Donaldson was shot previously by police on Dorr Street. The police said that Lester Donaldson, who was having a supper with a small knife, got up off his bed that he was seated on and lunged at them through the mattress. The mattress was taken up from the foundation and was held in front of Lester. And the police shot through the mattress and killed Lester Donaldson. Now, this was one of the largest demonstrations that we had. We went to 14th Division, and we demonstrated with over 1,000 people. Once again, we worked with Mrs. Donaldson. I think the officer was Divinity. Divinity was charged for his death. All through these killings, no police officer was ever convicted. And I could go on. I could tell you about about Martin Neal. This is a young man who was parked in a car, had no confrontation with police. Police asked him to open the car. He didn't, and he was shot 3 times. Marlon did not die. Sophia Cook. I'm giving those of you who do not know an idea of what we did over the past 30, 40 years. Sophia Cook was in the back seat of a car. And she also was shot by the police. A young black youth who was never named was shot in Scarborough. And this black youth was shot by a black police officer. He didn't die, that one did not die. Jonathan Howell, 19-year-old, wounded by police. Rowan Bognor, and this was in 1991, was shot also by police. And this other killing, Raymond Lawrence was shot to death at Lansdowne and Bloor. And this killing sparked the 1992 so-called riot on Yonge Street. This was a massive demonstration, okay? The police called it a riot. I say it's resistance against police oppression and police killing. Ian Coley, young man, Ian Coley, shot to death. The police said they were chasing Ian Coley and they heard something like a bullet. Ian Coley jumped over a fence and he was shot to death by police. Once again, we always work with the family. Before Black Action Defense Committee organized any kind of demonstration, the first action we take is to speak to the family to get their cooperation in our involvement in issues, and that's what we did in all of them. Hagrid Moses, this was a very Albert Moses, if I remember, was the man that was taken into the alley port of police station in Dundas. And you could see on the video when they put a button beneath his neck and dragged him in the alley port, and he eventually died. That was another very sad killing. Tommy Barnett, young man that was shot in Jane. And then again, we have this killing of Suleiman, the Indian youth that was killed in Newmarket. We went and we demonstrated against that kind of shooting. It is not only African youth and victims that the Black Action Defense Committee supported. We even supported, you know, people like Edmund Yu. We'll remember the killing of Edmund Yu. Edmund Yu was a Chinese Canadian who was in a bus. He had a small hammer. The driver told everybody to get off the bus. Edmund Yu and the driver remained on the bus. The officer went on the bus and eventually shot Edmund Yu to death. Yeah. So we have a good idea. Hugh Dawson, young fellow in Scarborough. Hugh Dawson was shot to death by a police officer who earlier on, 2 years prior to that, shot another black youth. So, you know, this is a brief history of police atrocities in Toronto. The recent ones are still outrageous. We still continue to have not only police killing of young black youth and others in this community, but the everyday assault on our community continues. I believe that we have a responsibility to continue to struggle against police oppression. I must admit, we have come a long way from the days of Fantina and McCormack. A long way from those days. We do not see the every month shooting of black people in the community ever anymore. But we should not remain complacent in believing that the harassment of black youth are not happening. When I visited places like Joyceville, Mill Haven, Workworth, Colling Bay, and see the hundreds of young black men who are imprisoned, you know, it is evident that there is an enormous problem in our community. We have internal problems also that we cannot overlook. We have the problem of unlimited amount of guns and drugs in our community that our young people are getting involved in. And the reason for that, there are hundreds or thousands of young people in the city of Toronto that are unemployed, do not have skills for gainful employment. We must address these issues because it is very obvious that not only the police is at fault, but the three levels of government are at fault in not providing for young people so they can have a better way of life. This society has failed our young people, and even some of us. So, brothers and sisters, it is important that we re-energize ourselves in this community, that we not only focus only on the police who are on the beat, but on government that are there to make sure that police are accountable. Last statement before I sit down. Over the years, we have attended several commissions that were appointed by government. Pittman report, Carter's report, the Stephen Lewis's report, the Clay Lewis's report, and Just Cole report, who all recommended an independent civilian review of police misconduct. Today, we have nothing of the sort. We have the Special Investigations Unit that always, you know, work on the side of police. They have never charged any police officer for killing anyone. Now we have a new agency who's supposed to be an oversight that is run by a young black man by the name of Jerry McNeely. That is a farce. It has no credibility, okay? And I listened to this young man speaking, and each time he speaks, he begins by saying, the police will investigate. The police cannot investigate themselves. That has been the position of Black Action Defense Committee over the years and of other organizations in this community. The police cannot investigate themselves. We must ensure that we have a totally independent civilian body to review police acts of brutality and killings in this city of Toronto. If we do not do that, our children will continue to be killed, be imprisoned, and government will do what they did 2 weeks ago by shutting down this city, spending $1 billion to entertain their friends. Thank you very much.
That was Dudley Laws speaking in Toronto in July of 2010, just a few weeks following the G20 meetings in that city. Just before we end the show today, a quick mention. So we were hoping to play the song Combien de Morts by Emical, who's a member of the local collective, hip-hop collective, Community Vibe Collective, We're out of time, but just to say that we want to specifically mention that, of course, it's always relevant to be talking about police brutality and the police killing specifically of black folks and in black communities, as we just heard Dudley Laws speaking.